Howdy, folks. It's the Ken Dog here with another edition of the Dogcast here at dogsmoviehouse.com. And admittedly, we're playing a bit of catch-up because yours truly was on vacation for a while. I've seen the movies, and if you've been listening to my broadcasts on American Matters Media and also on the Pat Wall Show, both of which have links on my site, you know that I've actually reviewed these movies, but I haven't really brought anything to the Dogcast or written for a while on my site, which is kind of the back-asswards way to do it, given that I'm trying to get you all to listen to me here, watch what I post, and read what I write, among other things. So we're going to play a little bit of catch-up here. I've got a couple of movies on this edition that go back a couple of weeks. They are still in theaters. One of them is going to be out of theaters pretty soon, so you may want to check that out pretty quick. And one is still firmly entrenched in the top 10. I'll let you know pretty quick whether or not they are worth seeing. First one on the list is Girl on the Train, or The Girl on the Train. It is the film adaptation of the bestseller by Paula Hawkins. Writing credits go to Aaron Cressida Wilson, and it's directed by Tate Taylor, who's probably best known for his adaptation of The Help, and also the very good music biopic Get On Down, biopic about James Brown. And this one is a mixed bag. There is a reason to see this particular film, and that reason is Emily Blunt. She plays Rachel, who is a raging alcoholic for reasons that are explained during the course of the film, and she is the aforementioned girl on the train. And what she does is she rides the train back and forth between her old neighborhood and basically inserts herself mentally into the lives of the people who live nearest to her as she passes from her suburb into New York and back again. And there are several characters that get her attention. Justin Theroux, who plays Tom, her ex-husband, is chief among them. Haley Bennett plays Megan, who is Tom's new wife. Haley Bennett is Megan, Tom's nanny. Rebecca Ferguson plays Anna, who is Tom's new wife. There is a bit of conflict dealing with childbirth and the like, or lack thereof. Anyway, the point is it's a twisty-turny story, and Rachel finds herself embroiled in the abduction of Megan. She can't trust anything that she has seen because of her alcohol-induced blackouts, and she has to try and summon some sort of willpower to figure out what happened before she gets arrested and charged with the crime herself. Allison Janney plays Detective Riley, who, unfortunately for Miss Janney, who's a great actress, it's a poorly written character in terms of procedural. In any event, this movie, the main reason to see it, like I said before, is to see Emily Blunt. She is really, really good at playing a very unsympathetic character who is basically trying to earn your sympathy throughout the course of the film, and she does. It's all in her eyes. She's usually presented as a very glamorous actress, very pretty. Here, there is a depth of despair that is in her eyes, subtle makeup changes, the way she acts when she's drunk, her anger, what she can trust, what she can't, and by extension, what the audience can trust and what the audience cannot trust. And that is the best part of the film. Watching her work. The rest of it, not so much. The twists and turns don't amount to much. The other characters are sparsely written. You have very good actors like Luke Evans as Scott, the young, volatile husband of Haley Bennett's Megan, who is a suspect because he's got a temper. All of these individuals who have done great work in other films are kind of half-formed characters, so you don't really care about them that much. And the big reveal isn't really a big reveal. Even if you haven't seen or read the book, you'll probably see it coming a mile away. If you don't, that's okay. You'll enjoy the film a lot more because of it. But despite the strong performance, I can't really recommend this. I'm going to give this 2.5 out of 5 on the old Barkometer, and matinee at best. The next one is... It came on a really firestorm of controversy, and it had nothing to do with the film. This is Birth of a Nation, written, directed, and starring Nate Parker, doing his own Orson Welles imitation. And unfortunately, Nate Parker, much like Welles, is embroiled in controversy at this point over a rape case that occurred while he was at Penn State at college in 1999. He was acquitted, but his alleged victim took her life. And apparently, I haven't read any of the transcripts, but apparently what he did, if it wasn't criminal, was pretty ugly. And his refuting of any claims or taking any responsibility seems to be dogging this particular production. And it's kind of unfortunate because Parker's crafted a very watchable movie. It wants to be 12 Years a Slave, but it doesn't quite get there. Basically, Nate Parker plays Nat Turner, and this is a dramatization of the Nat Turner Slave Rebellion down in the South, where he basically turned from preacher to try and keep most of the slaves in line for his overseer, played by Armie Hammer, who plays Samuel Turner in one of a handful of really good performances. And he changes from preacher to warrior with a vengeance and a spree, the rebellion that took the lives of not only the slave owners but their families as well, and became a very powerful symbol of rebellion that would last all the way into the Civil War. And so what you have here is a basic two-act story, if you will. You have Nat Turner learning how to read the Bible at a very young age, and can't read the books that are for white folks, as Penelope Ann Miller's Elizabeth Turner, who is Samuel Turner's mother, says. And what happens is his conversion by steps from, you know, basically a favored slave, almost friend to Samuel Turner, to outcast and then eventual rebellion leader. While a lot of people have talked about the violence in this film, to be honest with you, I've seen a lot worse. Some of it is a bit shocking, but most of that happens early on. One slave owner forces a slave to eat by basically chipping out his teeth. That's unpleasant to watch. You can't get around that. But what plagues this particular movie is the same thing for me that plagued Oliver Stone's Snowden. Also a very watchable film, but this particular movie is very good until he turns into the rebel leader, because it creates a balanced portrait of what's going on at that particular time. The depiction of slavery in the South is very well done, and how individuals in different areas get around it, and how, you know, the racism is at its most insidious when it's couched in kindness. Penelope Ann Miller, like I said before, playing Elizabeth Turner, means well, but that institutionalized racism is still doing a grave disservice to Nat Turner and anybody she comes into contact with. Same with Armie Hammer, Samuel Turner. He is, you know, air quotes here, kind for the most part as an overseer, until he's not, you know, and those types of things are very effective at portraying the insidious nature of slavery and what was going on at the South at the time. Less effective are characters like Jackie Earle Haley's Raymond Cobb, who is a mustache-twirling villain of the worst sort, and you just know that he and Nat are going to scrap in the final battle. To me, that takes it out of the realm of reality and into more of a Hollywood type of catharsis for the audience. The audience wants to see the bad guy get its comeuppance. Well, that's the bad guy, and we're going to see him get his comeuppance. I don't know if it really happened that way. If it did, great, but it's a little bit too Hollywood for me. Also, the movie loses its sense of objectivity as soon as Nat Turner becomes the slave leader, you know, leading the rebellion. And they basically canonize him, the filmmakers do, much like Snowden was canonized in the movie. He is the good guy, the saint, if you will. Aside from one small scene, effective scene, where he makes his first kill and you know, wretches. He's pretty much on board with it, and it's a good thing, and everybody thinks it's a good thing. And, you know, woe be on to all the evil people that they kill. Keep in mind, this dude killed families. He just went all out. And there is no sense of balance in that when it comes to it. No sense of doubt. No sense of any of the stuff that the emotional detail that marked the first part of the movie, which I enjoyed a lot more. So it's kind of a movie in two parts. The first part is very well done. The second, not so much. Depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for a well-moderated, well-told tale, you're going to have trouble with it. If you're looking for that catharsis, where it's, let's get them because they're bad, then you're going to get something better out of it. For me, again, about 2.5 out of 5 on Dogs Barker Meter, maybe a 3. It's a little bit better than Girl on the Train. Fascinating in parts, but again, a matinee. And you got to catch this one pretty quick because as of this particular telling, it's basically bowing out of theaters at an alarming rate. You might be better off waiting to catch this one on video. That's it for this edition of the Dogcast. When we come back with our next one, we're going to have a couple of others. Films that are more recent, The Accountant and Kevin Hart's What Now? So we'll see you soon, and remember to comment freely and watch the clips below, and we will see you on the next episode of the Dogcast here on DogsMovieHouse.com. So saith the Ken Dog.